Hey guys, welcome back to Range of Survival and Fieldcraft. I'm Andrew. Now, what I have for you today is a video by popular request, but a prequel to a video I made about 6 months ago on advanced bushcraft survival skills. This video is going to be basic or beginner bushcraft survival skills, but you're not going to get off that easy today because we're going to make these skills just a little bit more difficult and demonstrate some improvisation with our bushcraft and survival skills. So, let's go. Now we're going to start off as basic as it gets with bushcraft survival skills. We're out here in the field and we're going to harvest material. There's a lot of material around the area we can use, hardwood and softwoods, but all we need to get started is that Swiss Army knife out of our pack and the saw that's in that Swiss Army knife. We have the ability to do a lot of bushcraft skills with just some basic tools. We don't need a large axe or a felling saw or large bush knives or machetes on our hip to do a lot of skills. Really, a small Swiss Army knife or multi-tool that has a saw, a blade, and a reamer are all are just enough to actually harvest material off the landscape, process that material down into the tools that we need. This skill we're going to do is as basic and beginner level as it gets, but it crosses over from bushcraft into survival, and we can use it when we're out in the field, especially if we're in wet conditions. It has been raining the last few days in this area. It's still very muddy and soft on the forest floor. While we can't be worried really about moisture getting into our pack with a nice backpack like the one we have, we can still get our gear up off the ground with a very simple method. We take out some cordage from our kit, and then that material we harvested with our Swiss Army knife and that saw blade, we can create a simple toggle, or in this case a bag hanger from a tree, to actually get our gear up off the ground. We hang it at about shoulder to chest height so we can still get in that bag. But this is a great method and a very basic or beginner skill that everyone should know. And if we practice this enough, we'll look pretty professional in the field, having a lot of dry equipment while everybody else's equipment is sitting on the wet forest floor. In the forest, it's best practice to use old material, things that are still viable from an old campsite or things we come across, instead of cutting down good material. That way we take care of the environment and the forest. The piece of material that we found is an old stick from a previous shelter out here. It was a hardwood, but it has survived the winter, albeit a little bit damp on the exterior, but it's still a hardwood, still a viable piece of material to use as a baton, or in this case, a multi-purpose tool, dig stick. We're going to get our axe out and move to a stump or a down tree so we can use that as a makeshift anvil to actually begin carving our baton or our dig stick. This dig stick is going to have a pointed end with a spade cut. We use our axe for that. And then at the top end, it's going to have a trimmed end. That trimmed end, we just take our knife and our hatchet and trim around the ends to make it round as possible for a nice handhold. This dig stick is going to be a multi-purpose tool because we can use it for so many things. Simple sticks like this are a basic survival and bushcraft skill everybody should know. Our dig stick has five main purposes. That first one being just a simple baton to split material with our knife. It also acts as a toggle if we want to do some pull-ups from a tree out in the field. We can also use that baton or dig stick as a club to smash things. And then we can use that baton or that dig stick as well as a throwing stick to go after game on the ground. And then we can also use it as a digging stick with that spade end to dig up wild edibles, in this case wild onions, out of the field. Another tool that we can bring with us without all the accoutrements that are attached to it is just a simple saw blade. In this case, a 21-inch saw blade that's stowed safely inside our bush pot. We can just pull that out, and as we notice, we have key rings, or in this case, grenade pin rings, already attached to the ends through the eyes of that saw blade so that we can use it and have it ready for the field. Now what we're going to make is a simple bow saw. This is perfect for beginners and novice bushcrafters as well as survival because we can harvest simple material, construct a saw blade very quickly, and then take down larger material if we need to. But we want to look for a sapling that will have some flexibility. We bend that over to make sure that it's got the flexibility that we need. And then we can take our saw blade, pull out our bandana, wrap the bandana around the saw blade and over the teeth, and use that as a simple handsaw if we didn't have any other cutting tools with us. Just a simple technique. But once we harvest that sapling, we take it back to camp, and then we take out our knife, and we want to baton the ends of our sapling so that they marry up as we attach the blade to the sapling to make our bow saw. We have the rings in place already, acting as pegs to stop that bow from coming undone around our saw blade. But we fix the blade in place, applying a little bit of tension and pressure. That sapling will naturally want to bend back to straight, keeping the saw in place with friction. And now we have our bow saw done and ready to go. If we're feeling a little bit froggy, we can also take 550 cord or any cordage and whip the ends of our bow saw just to make it a little bit stronger. But we can use this saw to harvest large material. Sawing through that material, we can angle the front of the saw down to take advantage of the kerf, pushing all of the debris out, and then finally harvest the material. But we can take large logs, just like this one, very easily. For our next skill, we're gonna make a simple bush chair, but we're gonna make a bipod bush chair that we're gonna lean against a tree. I found some old material that we've used in a previous video to set up different shelters. Perfect length, already ready to go for us, that we're gonna use for this skill. We're gonna use a timber hitch for our beginning knot. A timber hitch, go along with our bipod legs here, is simply just creating a bite in the end of our cordage or the running end, and then we can put our finger through that bite and just rotate it until we get 5 or 6 wraps around our running and standing end, creating that candy cane or that twist effect. And that is a timber hitch, and then all we have to do after that is just take the timber hitch, put it around one of the poles at the top end, feed the standing end through, tighten it down, and we're good to go. From there, all we have to do is wrap around both bipod legs 5 to 6 times, and then we go in between the legs, creating fraps. We create fraps by wrapping around the cordage that we've already made our wraps with between the bipod legs, and then tightening that down with our toggle. We can use our baton or our dig stick to use as a toggle to tighten the cordage down. We go and create those fraps in between the legs 3 or 4 times, and then we finish with a clove hitch right on top of our knot on one of the legs. It doesn't really matter, but the clove hitch is a good knot because it's a self-tightening knot. We simply wrap around the legs twice, creating an X as we overlap, feed the excess through the X, tighten it down until the clove hitch is cinched, create an overhand knot, and then cut off the excess, and we have our wraps and fraps done for our bipod. Good to go. To create the seat for our bush chair, we're just gonna use our tarp and some cordage we made from our advanced skills video about 6 months ago. Cordage is still strong, still good to go. So we're gonna take our tarp, lay it out, we wanna fold it over on itself lengthwise, and then fold it in half, marrying the meshed ends or the hemmed ends up, creating a loop at the bottom of our tarp, and that's gonna be our seat. We wanna have enough room to play with and make a strong enough seat that's not gonna give out on us. Once we're satisfied with that fold, we find the hemmed ends and we S-fold them together like a good paratrooper, and then take our cordage and we're gonna tie a knot around the hemmed ends, take the excess, flip it over top of itself, and then simply tie a secure knot as best as possible with the cordage we have. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it does have to be secure. Once we're done with that, we simply create an overhand knot with the excess ends together, giving us that double overhand, and our seat is ready to go. Now that our bipod legs and our seat are complete, all we have to do is set it up. Grab our bipod legs and spread them out, set them against a tree or lean them against a tree until they're secure, we're satisfied. We take our seat and that double overhand knot and the excess material of our cordage, we simply put over top of one of the legs of our bipod, put a cross section in between the tarp at that loop we created with the fold, and then we simply sit down and enjoy the chair. For our next task, we're gonna use our bow saw and harvest about 4 8-to-9-inch sections of material from this dead dry hardwood that was just near camp. And what we're gonna make are some tent stakes. Now, tent stakes are easy and cheap to make, and we can make them from all the material around us. So if we happen to lose one, drop it, or throw it in the fire, we can simply recreate it. And of course, if we're not carrying tent stakes to begin with, it means that much more time on the front end for our shelter. But there is a right way and a lot of wrong ways to make tent stakes. I know you're shocked. The right way is to go back to that anvil with our hatchet, our material, and our knife that we had earlier. And we're going to carve a trimmed end at the top of our tent stakes and a spade end at the bottom, just like our dig stick. That rounded end at the top is so that as we bash it with a hammer, it won't split out on us. And then that spade end is to actually dig in the earth and help tighten our shelter. We're going to face the actual cut away from our attachment point. And as we hammer in the earth, it will actually pull or tighten our material as it eats in the earth, because it's going to go at an angle toward our original anchor point, thus tightening our shelter. Tent stakes are good to know. Now that we have our tent stakes done, we already have cordage, a toggle, we have our tarp, and we have our bipod legs. We're going to set up a modification to a simple shelter of the plow shear. Typically a plow shear is attached to a tree or a single point of attachment, and then we stake out the three other corners with one corner lifted at the point of attachment with that tree to give us the plow shear shape. But in this case, we can use our bipod legs from our bush chair to act as our point of attachment to create a plow shear away from a main anchor point. The beauty of this is that those bipod legs can be adjusted to actually move the tarp up and down. And it's very simple and easy to put up. Why not use all the materials we have available? So what we do is just lay out our tarp in a diamond shape, put one stake in the bottom corner, and then put our toggle through the eyelet of the top corner of our tarp, hang it over our bipod legs, secure it with cordage, and then take that cord down, tie a knot, secure it in front of our shelter with another stake, and then all we have to do is simply stake out the other two corners, and we have our plow shear set up and complete. If we want a little warmth in our shelter, the short side of our tarp should be facing the sun. If we want to get a little bit more shade and have some cool air underneath our tarp, we point that long portion of our tarp toward the sun, limiting the sun getting in our shelter. And this is a very easy shelter to set up, and we can have a fire out front if we need to. Bushcraft. Too easy. What do we do if we don't have a backpack to begin with, or we come across materials or lose our backpack and we have to carry things over distance and terrain to get to our next campsite or self-rescue out of a survival situation or just for bushcraft? Too easy. We create a pack frame for it. And one of the simplest ways to do that is called a Roycroft pack frame. This is going to be in the style of a triangle. This triangle at the top, the portion behind our head, we're going to tie it just like we did our bipod legs, timber hitch, 5 or 6 wraps, 3 or 4 fraps in between, and then secure that with a clove hitch, overhand knot, and we're done. However, we're going to use diagonal lashing for the bottom portion that is going to attach and go behind our waist. And for diagonal lashing, we still use that timber hitch, but now we're just going to wrap over the material in between those joints as they connect, because it is at an odd angle. And then we still secure it with a clove hitch and an overhand knot to both sides, and our Roycroft pack frame is done. This is based off a Canadian version taught to the Canadian military that we've adapted. Very simple, easy to use. Now that we have our pack frame complete, we can actually create attachment points that can go on each side of our pack frame to make life just a little bit easier and add just a little bit more difficulty to this simple skill. What we're going to do is find 3 small sticks and then take some of that excess cordage we had from attaching or constructing our pack frame and make a lark's head in the middle of our cordage, put that stick through, and then at the 2 ends running away from that lark's head, we simply create an overhand knot, and we have 3 toggles complete. We attach those 3, one to each side of our pack frame, to act as though attachment points for our gear. With those attachment points, it makes life a lot easier. We could go without and just take all of our cordage and wrap around our pack frame and wrap all our gear up and then wear it, but it wouldn't be very comfortable and we would use a lot of cordage. We may need that cordage while we're on the move in our survival or bushcraft situation, so save on cordage and create these toggles to make life just a little easier. Whenever we pack our gear, it goes inside of our tarp as best as possible to keep it waterproof or water resistant. We fold over the ends, and then the ends usually go down on the pack frame, and they're going to be closest to our back as we wear our gear. But we're going to be surprised, because this method with the toggles is going to require very little cordage. We can actually take out the hank of 550 cord from our pocket. It's about 6 feet or so, and then attaching the first portion of our cordage to the bottom of our pack frame. We wrap up and use a symmetrical pattern to make sure we hit all the corners of our pack and our gear, and then simply tie off the end of our cordage to the bottom or corner of our pack frame as we end, making sure it's secure and in place and ready for wear. With our pack good to go and secure, we're just going to use that cordage from our previous video to act as our shoulder straps. We're going to take the middle portion of our cordage, go in between our pack frame up over top, and then feed the excess through that loop, creating a lark's head. That's going to be our shoulder straps. From there, we just pick up the pack, put it on our back, find the ends of our cordage. We're going to wrap to the side around the ends of our Roycroft pack frame, pull it tight, tie it in front, and then we are ready to move through the woods, carry whatever gear we have. We can even attach more gear through the cordage on the outside. Good to go. Now for our next skill, we're going to turn up the difficulty level on this traditional bushcraft skill, and that is a pot hanger. But instead of making a cord pot hanger or one using cordage, we're going to use a cordless pot hanger, which will require just our Swiss Army knife and a little bit of skill. We're going to find that pot hanger section. It's going to look like a big check mark, and we have the hook end that we hang our pot on, and then we have the long tapered end that's actually going to be our adjustable end. On that long end, we're going to carve away saddle notches, one on each side, and we're going to make three of them. And with those saddle notches complete, we just take the reamer or the awl out of our Swiss Army knife, and we drill through those saddle notches. We create that flat surface with the saddle notch to make it just a little bit easier. But once we're through, we create three of those, and our adjustable pot hanger is done. We have a small stick that we can use as the peg, and we are good to go. With our adjustable pot hanger complete, now we just need our tripod. We're going to take our Swiss Army knife and harvest three tripod legs from material around the area. The important thing to note is that the ends of our tripod are forked. We have those forks because they're going to lean together and lock together to create our tripod. Once we have our legs and we've harvested from the landscape, we can play around with them and get them into the right configuration to stand up, those forks interlocking and supporting one another to create our tripod. Now all that's left for us to do is to take our adjustable pot hanger, put it in between the forked ends of our tripod as it sits, and then we can simply put that toggle or that peg through the holes that we've drilled in our adjustable pot hanger. And then we just attach or hang our pot from that tripod, and we're good to go. We can test this out and actually remove the peg, slide the adjustable pot hanger up and down very easily, put in that peg into the new hole, and let the bipod do its work, holding that weight and letting the pot and the pot hanger rest securely in those forked ends. And we can put a fire into this to cook food, and then we can lift that pot or lower it as we need to. A very simple technique, especially with just a pocket knife and no cordage. Good to go. And our bushcraft video wouldn't be complete without some fire, so we're going to use a more traditional fire kit. Still can be difficult in adverse conditions, but a lot of material here that we can use to get fire going. Inside of our ditty bag, we have our Hudson Bay Flint and Steel kit. It comes with a solar lens that we can use for solar ignition, as well as flint and steel and some tinder material. We also have a larger lens that we carry with us for solar ignition, some chaga to use with that. And then finally, another flint and steel striker that we use not only for flint and steel ignition, but we can use as a bearing block for a bow drill kit. Now, solar ignition can be very tricky, especially if we work with materials that don't have the magnification power necessary or require a lot more patience to use while we wait for that solar ray to actually ignite our tinder material, whatever it may be. But in this case, we have a good fire lens that we can use with the sun's rays. It is intermittently cloudy today. There was a lot of rain last night, and the clouds are still with us, but the sun is peeking through, and we have an opportunity to actually get solar ignition with chaga. With the chaga, all we have to do is cut off a small portion to create that ember. We'll put that inside of our Hudson Bay tin, and then we just take our fire lens or magnification lens and harness the sun's rays, focusing that beam into the smallest portion possible, and you'll see that chaga begin to smoke almost immediately. We want to make sure we get a good portion, like the end of a cigarette lit on that chaga, and then we can take a break, get our tinder bundle, because that chaga will still continue to burn. We take that chaga, add it to our tinder bundle, and begin to blow it into flame. I've noticed that with this technique, it does take a little bit more material or a little bit more patience and finer material in the tinder bundle to actually get flame, but eventually it will burn and we have fire. Now for our next fire task, we're going to use flint and steel. Flint and steel, very traditional frontiersman way to get fire. High carbon steel and a very hard rock. It's what they carried. Now there are two different ways to use flint and steel. The first way is to keep the steel static and move the rock. We move the rock by striking glancing blows against that steel all the way down to shave off material that turn into sparks, land on fine tinder material, and ignite that tinder material into an ember like this char material, and then we can blow that into flame inside a tinder bundle. The other way that we do this is by holding the rock static with our tinder material on top of the rock, holding it with our hands and our fingers, and then striking glancing blows with the steel, so we move the steel. The reason we do this is if we have fine tinder material and need to keep control of it and don't have a container, we strike down with the steel and those sparks will be shaved off upwards, landing on our tinder and igniting it. And our last firecraft method, very traditional one, been around for about 10,000 years, is the bow drill friction fire set, made up of five components. We have the hearth board, we have the spindle, the catch, the bearing block, and the bow with the string. Now that first portion is going to be our spindle. We want the spindle to be long, generally thumb size, and maybe a little bit larger in diameter. We want it extra long, so we have multiple attempts with that spindle because it's going to burn down and waste away. That spindle also has the pointy end for vampires, but it is beveled, so we reduce friction at the top where that bearing block sits. Next, we have that bearing block, the thing we bear down with. Our divot in the bearing block just needs to be wide and shallow and good enough to actually hold everything in place as we drill. Next, we have our hearth board. Our hearth board is already good to go. We actually used this set to instruct survival students last week at a bushcraft course, so we're going to use this one again because it is good to go. We're going to avoid the burn-in and all the carving. The set is good to go. We're just going to go over the function and components. With that hearth board, we have our notch already cut. We've already drilled in, and we're ready to actually get an ember. This is a proven set. Underneath the hearth board at the point of that notch is our catch. That catch, flat piece of material that will not disturb the function of the bow drill, will catch that ember and all of that char as it falls out and coagulates into an ember, and we can use that to actually transfer it to our tinder bundle safely. Next, we have just our bow. With a bow, we want a bow that has a forked end or at least a way to attach the cordage in a non-slip loop as we put it around the top portion of our bow. And then at the end, a recommendation is that we just split that end, put the cordage through, and then wrap the cordage around itself in between the bow and the string, and then just wrap very quickly and attach the excess cordage back through that split that we made in the end of our bow, lashing everything together and keeping it straight. Just a little bit of knowledge is that when we use a bow drill set, we need to clean it up in between takes as we go for another ember. This means just shaving off the charred material on our spindle, increasing a little bit of friction. That way we can produce a lot of heat down on the hearth board. With our set cleaned up, we're ready to go for another ember and another fire. We can use that same single burn-in that we used for another fire teaching survival students last week because there is enough material available. As long as there is enough material in the hearth board and the spindle combined, we can produce another ember with that same notch and that same burn-in to get a second fire. A very common technique as long as we have enough material. But with our body set up, we're going to place our non-dominant foot on top of our hearth board. Our dominant knee is behind or directly behind our non-dominant heel, but out of the way of our arm as we operate the bow. We place our spindle in the hearth board and then lock everything in place with our bearing block, locking the hand holding our bearing block or the wrist next to our shin or our leg. And we begin drilling with our bow. What we want to do is operate that bow, keeping it as parallel to the ground as possible without any up or down movement as we spin. A little bit of deviation is fine, but we want to be generally straight. As we continue to drill, we'll notice more smoke. As more smoke occurs, we can press down harder and add a little bit more speed to create more friction, and we'll notice the notch filling and the ember finally falling out. If it's smoking freely on its own, it's good to go. It's a viable ember, and then that way we can transfer it to our tinder bundle and blow it into flame. Now, some free chicken for you is, how do we wrap up our bow drill set and take it with us if we're on the move? A technique is taking our cordage that we used for our bow drill string, and then keeping that end of the line bowline on our string, we put the excess through, creating a loop. We can wrap that loop then around all components minus our bow and safely wrap it a few times, and then create some fraps going in between the components of our bow drill set, creating a nice little wrapped, ready to go bow drill kit that we can travel with, and then we can just harvest another bow or bow material at our next campsite if we don't want to carry the bow with us. But this is very easy, and we can place it inside of our pack, ready to go. All right, guys, well, I hope you like this video. A lot of work in this video, basic skills, and we added some difficulty to them. But if you did like this video, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, leave me a comment in the comment section. I always appreciate your feedback. I want to thank you guys for everything you do for me, for this channel, for your likes, your views, your subscriptions, your comments, your feedback, and your shares. And I'll be back with another video as soon as I can, guys. Thanks.